You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
All right, looks like we are live for episode 6 of the Beer Tour Guy show with Steve Johnson. I'm that guy. I'm your host. And today in the Podcast Detroit studios in beautiful downtown Royal Oak, I have Joe from Liberty Street Brewing Company. Say hello.
Hi, everybody.
Wow, that was easy.
Yeah.
So there you go. Like I said, no music. We just start talking. It's so simple. In fact, we were so excited. Joe was here early, and we're already partway into some beer. I'm loving it, right?
Oh, me too. This is my favorite one right now. Has been for a few months now. We just released this one back in May, I believe it was. It's our Eagle IPA. It's a session IPA. It's 4.5% alcohol, so lower sessionable. You could have a few of them. And it's made with all Michigan hops from Top Hops Farms, our buddy Sean.
Oh, I know Sean pretty good.
Oh, yeah. He introduced us to the cashmere hop with a sample a couple years ago, and we did a smash with it, and it turned out fantastic. Everybody, it was called Cashmere Smash Beer, so cool name.
Oh, I like that name.
Yeah, and it tasted great. I thought it had like a grapefruit type aroma and flavor, which I personally like the unsweetened grapefruit juice. I know it's not the best for everybody, but this kind of has that character and, you know, real clean finish. So it is really, you know, definitely sessionable.
It's a good 1 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon kind of beer.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah, if you're going to be day drinking, this is a good way to do it.
Well, most of my life right now, I do a lot of day drinking. So I have to say, like in the last couple of years, I've really gravitated toward finding a lot more beers just like this that I can casually drink while I'm being the life of a tour guide. And I can't be drinking Russian Imperial Stouts aged in bourbon barrels, triple aged in caves and shit like that. When I'm doing regular tours, because it makes me say funny things. Next thing you know, I'm giving everyone free T-shirts, and I'm not really making a lot of money. So not good for your business when you're doing it that way. Hence, a beer like this is a perfect choice. So thank you for bringing that.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I got pretty excited because as I let Joe in the front door here at Podcast Detroit Studios, he had a whole case of beer with them. And I go, hey, you do know it's just the two of us. He's like, oh, yeah. Well, I figured you could handle a 12-pack in an hour show, right? I'm like, well, maybe 6-pack, but maybe not a 12-pack. I don't know.
Yeah, I actually recently had around 12 of these one evening, and even though it's a lower ABV sessionable, you know, 4.5% beer, they'll catch up. They'll catch up to you just as fast as the rest of the stuff.
Back though, when we were in our younger years, and you and I are pretty similar in age range. I'm mid 40s now. I'm sure in my 20s, I probably could have said that and done that, but not now. The body does what the body wants to do, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
So, okay. So let's kind of start a little bit at the beginning here, Joe. We know each other for a bunch of years now. And why don't you give me a little bit of your background kind of prior to beer and then kind of lead me up to opening up Liberty Street Brewing, and we'll kind of go from there.
All right. Well, I am definitely originally from the Southeast Michigan area. I was born in Detroit, actually raised in Detroit, and then moved out Dearborn Heights and got married. And that's when I started homebrewing at one point. I was actually working in the beverage industry. I did 5 years in quality assurance and beverage manufacturing and packaging at Pepsi in Detroit. Boy, I really enjoyed that job there. That was great work. And I liked the place too, the way they treated us. And then I went to Coca-Cola after that, went into supervision in the quality assurance department. And in that position, I actually had a lot of, help with the production department as well as the maintenance department, just based on, some of the experiences and trainings that I had at Pepsi. They were pretty valuable. I mean, my first day at Coca-Cola, I reprogrammed a stretch wrap machine from them that had dropped the PLC program. And it's, you know, I'm there at 10 o'clock at night and nobody knew how to do it. And, you know, they were impressed that I came to them with that kind of a skill. So it was there. I was, I had always been interested in brewing, always interested in making beer, basically ever since I saw it on Three's Company. Mr. Roper made beer on the stove, and that was probably
Three's Company. That's where I got my first interest about it, too, for sure.
Well, just the scientific and, you know, scientific end of it, I'm thinking, wait a minute, what? You can make beer at home. I never at that point really looked into it or researched it at all. But then my older brother had made some beer, and his not so good. One of them good, the other two not so good. I started getting interested at that point, I guess. And then another coworker at Coca-Cola who'd been brewing for a little while, he kind of pushed me and said, dude, just do it. Just go get the stuff and make it happen. So I eventually started brewing, and then I just got obsessed with it. And I mean, literally, I remember my previous hobby was small office, home office networking, and my house had 8 computers connected at
8?
One time.
Computers connected. Wow.
And one of them was in the garage. And I remember I was in the garage and I remembered, oh, home brewing. And I did a Google search and I didn't sleep for 2 nights. I just stayed there. And even once I wasn't even actually brewing yet, just the research end of it in the first place, I would wake up in the middle of the night having a dream about a different technique or adjusting a process. And I hadn't even brewed yet at this point. So once I finally got equipment, I was I learned that, well, from my brother and others. First, don't bottle, because that'll make you quit brewing, home brewing. So I started out, I got draft equipment first before I
even
got
brewing
equipment.
So tell me that. Why not bottle?
Well, it's a lot of work. If you make a 5-gallon batch, you're looking at, you know, 2.5 cases of bottles. You have to wash and sanitize each individually, then fill them all individually and seal them individually.
Totally doesn't sound like fun.
No, it's a lot of work. And if you've got a partner, say your spouse or the next door neighbor or whoever that's gonna help you out, well, then that's not a bad idea. But when it's by yourself, the one tip that I heeded there was, you know, that'll make you quit brewing really quick. And the other reason that you would quit brewing really fast is if you make your first batch of beer and it tastes like crap. So I got my draft equipment first, my kegging equipment first for my homebrew. And then when I started brewing, I did 2 batches immediately, one after another, because I figured, okay, if that first one is bad, I still have a chance with the second one. And they were just kits, extract with steeping grains, you know, not a big deal, but I followed directions extremely well and they turned out pretty good, you know, for what they were. And I immediately upgraded.
What was the style? You remember?
I don't recall at all. I know I have the records still.
Okay.
I know exactly where
they
are.
Oh, you do?
Oh, I have the records for every beer I've ever brewed. Absolutely.
Okay.
Even all the recipe changes between them. It's somewhere, but it was probably something like a brown ale or a porter, something a little more forgiving, I'm sure.
We'll have to check with your secretary, see if she knows.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll check the archives for it. As it were.
So, okay. So you brewed those first couple and you liked them. You were happy with it.
Yeah. They turned out good. And then, you know, I made a few more and then I, you know, started reading up on the all grain and upgraded equipment. I ended up buying a really nice 3-tier kegel system. And then I started buying my grain by the bags, by full bags of grain. And, it got pretty ridiculous. I was making, I would brew once or twice every week, and I would brew 2 or 4 10-gallon batches. Yeah, and I didn't have people. It's a lot, and I would forego sleep to do this. I had a regular 50, 60-hour a week job, and I would still make all that beer. But I had my process down to like 2 batches I could do in like 8 or 9 hours from beginning to end. And relatively inexpensive with the buying the grain in full bags. So, I would make 20 to 40 gallons a week, and I could only maybe drink 1.5 gallons out of it if I'm trying hard.
Did you make a lot of friends then?
it was tough to get people to come over at the time. I was like midnight, middle of the night drinking. So, you know, brewing and drinking middle of the night. So it's tough to get people to come over, and they're all telling me to bottle it. And I tell them, hell no, I have 25 corny kegs and I'm not.
Oh, wow. 25 corny kegs. Yeah.
And I had a little five tap refrigerator. I would have five cornies in there and a CO2 tank inside. So it was a nice thing to have as a home brewer. But like I said, I only drank a little bit. So I would maybe have one or two pints of something. And there was a lot of beers. In fact, full 10-gallon batches, I might have had less than a half a pint. I just tasted it a few times over a course of a week of aging, and then would eventually dump both kegs, the full 10 gallons. I would dump a lot of beer, basically, because to me it was more the experience. Yeah. Oh, boy, did I want to learn it. Yeah, I would change, like, my mild Southern English mild Pub House Brown now. That started as a recipe from Jason over at Adventures in Homebrewing back when they were on Ford Road in Dearborn Heights.
Okay.
And he was saying, I told him how much I love that beer. And he says, oh, that's crazy. Nobody likes it. Nobody likes it. So I, you know, bought the recipe from him. Not bought rights to the recipe, but I bought the ingredients for the recipe from him. And I made it and I enjoyed it. And then I changed it a little, and then I changed it again. And I actually did, I have like 32 recorded changes on that recipe to get it to where I am now, where we do the Pub House Brown.
So is that common with some other recipes that you've developed before to have that many adjustments over time? Or is that one that you just said, I want to make this perfect to the level that I want it at?
A little bit of both. I mean, our American IPA, in fact, that has definitely changed over the course of years. From the time it was a homebrew recipe to the time we opened 9 years ago and named it the American, there's been a lot of changes, and mostly I would say with hops specifically. As we started getting hops from Sean over at Top Hops, we've been changing out some of the Pacific Northwest hops because the Michigan hops to me taste a little fresher. The Cascades were fresher. They're a little more higher in acids. They're a better value when it comes down to it. So we've made changes with that.
Does that mean you can use less of them because of that?
Yeah.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
I had the smaller hop farmers when they first started out, they're trying to at least cover cost, and the price per pound on their hops was a little higher than, a bit higher than the stuff we were getting through the normal distribution from Pacific Northwest.
Sure.
But eventually, you know, when I started seeing the acid levels on it and we did some sample brews, small batch stuff, and I come to realize it's worth the extra money because we could definitely use less of them and get a same or similar, sometimes even better character from them, bitterness and flavor.
Yeah, besides the fact that you're supporting local and you're getting it fresher, right? Those are
absolutely
bonuses to all that.
Definitely.
Yeah, they're doing a great job over there at Top Hops. I've been out there a few times. I had the last two summers, I did these great bike rides we called Tour de Hops, where we bike from Fenton Winery and Brewery out to Top Hops. And Sean and his dad would take people out on a hay ride and show them around, and then we'd drink some beer with his hops in it. That was a lot of fun, so I really got to know those guys pretty well. It's funny because you get out there, and I think the first time I met Sean out there, he's like, hey, jump in the trunk. And he grabs a couple beers, cracks them open, and then he starts driving me out to where all the hop fields are. And I'm like, what? You know, I can't drink this in a moving vehicle. And he kind of looks at me like I'm insane or something. And then it hit me. I'm like, oh, wait, this is all your property. We're out here on a farm. Like, you could do whatever you want, you know. And it's so funny. Like, I felt like such a city slicker. I didn't know better, you know, or I know what I'm supposed to know, and that is you don't drink in an automobile, but in a situation like that. Not that they're running around there, you know, with pony kegs out of the back of their trucks or anything. It's not like that. But it was just such an innocent thing, and I felt like so stupid now that I look at it. But I've really enjoyed watching them grow and seeing them develop relationships with your brewery and so many other breweries that they've done that with. They have to be one of the – at least on this side of the state – they would kind of be the one, the larger one, wouldn't they? Are there any other hop farmers, local hop farmers that you're dealing with?
We buy some other hops from Michigan Hop Alliance.
Yep.
Brian Tennis. We'll get some hops from him as well.
But all that's really coming up toward the Traverse City area. Would that be correct?
Well, mostly? The hops that we're getting are some, we get Mosaic and German. The Mosaic, I believe, is from New Zealand. And then Mandarina Bavaria, we use that. That's a German hop. So he's a distributor basically for other hops as well, not just right. Michigan hops.
Right. Oh, that's okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Got you. Okay. So I kind of jumped around there, though, as you were telling your story of homebrewing. So eventually you start down in recipes like that. And what gets you to doing that to say, all right, I'm going to open my own brewery?
Well, I was when I was at Coca-Cola, there was some rebuild work done on some of the blending for the lines. And there was a big, relatively brand new 250-gallon stainless tank that I was able to acquire.
Okay.
It was given to me by the plant manager, but you know, anyways, I had to take a wall down to get it out. It was not a lot of fun.
So an opportunity arose for you to get equipment.
Well, I'm so silly. I thought I was going to use this for my homebrew system.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Amazing. Okay.
And then I got it home and I'm thinking, all right, this isn't going to work for me. And I realized, okay, I could sell this off on probrewer.com as an international site for professional brewers. And I just knew it had classifieds for sale and stuff like that. So I posted the tank on there. And then I see other classifieds, and I saw a posting looking for an investor partner for a brewery, microbrewery in Chelsea, Michigan. So I got a hold of them. I figured, okay, let's see what this is all about. And I met up with a group that only one of the original members is still involved. I'm sorry, two of them plus me. And we have three other partners as well. So there's six of us total, but two of us that run the company with four minority partners. So that's how I got started. Now, Chelsea, Michigan, you ask, how are we in Plymouth, Michigan when we are looking in Chelsea? Plymouth was actually our eighth location, including two locations downtown Plymouth that we couldn't afford, and we ended up in the old village. But two locations in Chelsea, two in Brighton, and one in West Bloomfield that we are looking at. So we did end up with the property in, like I said, in the old village of Plymouth, and it just happened to be on Liberty Street. So,
oh, I get it.
Yeah, it just made
sense. Oh, my God, I just finally figured it out. No, I'm kidding.
So calling the brewery Liberty Street Brewing Company. There was already formerly Liberty Street Brewery in Akron, Ohio. They had closed several years ago prior, but I still didn't want to try to use that name. So we went with the Liberty Street Brewing Company. And for logo, I thought it was an obvious choice to go with a street sign to kind of punctuate the location or the locale type of motif, as it were. And then, of course, you can't resist going red, white, and blue for the
it's very American
as well. Absolutely. So, you know, a lot of breweries, a lot of brewers are going to tell you, oh, no, I won't sell it to anybody. I won't sell it to anybody. I'm not going to lie to you. When we landed on Liberty Street, I thought I can build this brand to perhaps sell, you know. So we did do patriotic branding with the beers. You know, we have the Red Glare Amber Ale, the Eagle IPA, you know, Maintain Vigilance. Our IPA is called The American. So, I mean, I kind of went that way, not pushing for a sale or anything, but definitely thinking in the back of my head, let's build a brand, not just have a brewery.
Okay. Not always what you hear, right? Not a lot of people say that or admit to that.
Nobody admits to it.
Right? Maybe they have, but they don't admit to it for sure.
Money's money, man.
Oh, money talks. And take it from someone else who's run a small business for 8 years here. I get it, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you opened finally in 2007, correct?
2008, December. Oops,
sorry.
We're just finishing our –
That's right, 2008. What am I saying?
Yeah, just finishing our ninth year, basically.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
That shows longevity right there.
In this day and age, yeah, that puts you as an elder statesman in the scene here, I would say.
That is the – that's the odd thing because
isn't
I
it? Doesn't
I
that sound remember, does that sound weird to you to say it that way?
It feels weird is what it is because, you know, in January we had the Michigan Brewers Conference in Kalamazoo every year. And I recall – I'll never forget both first years, the first day lunch, and I'm sitting at a table and Larry Bell comes and sits down. And I'll tell you what, he was cool as hell. I mean, I felt like, you know, he says, oh, you're – well, he remembered me from returning a couple kegs that I bought at in a lot in an auction. I gave them to him and gave him back, and I think he really appreciated that. So he remembered me from that, and like that first year, he's like, hey, how you guys doing? Let me tell you about – you got to look at this. You got to be careful with that. And you're not going to get your kegs back and all this. And – kind of give me a bunch of advice. The second year, he kind of did the same thing, you know? And I felt like the little brother or the son kind of a thing.
Sure.
Or the nephew to uncle telling me, you know, give me tips. But now, you know, we were number 72 way back when we opened. Now there's, what, 300 more
right
than that now? So, yes, we're definitely – we're the graybeards in the Brewers – you know, in the Michigan Brewers group. It's – you know, I go to that same convention now and
there's all kinds of people you don't recognize.
Yeah, but the old stalwarts like that, they're pulling me over in the hall to talk to me like they treat me like I'm one of them. I'm one of the guys that's been around forever. And, you know, it's a weird feeling to be kind of it's a weird feeling to be included with that, you know, elite group you know, the people who've done this forever.
I like to give examples of the early tours I started doing. And for me to be able to do stuff on the west side of Metro Detroit, it would be like I'd go see you in Plymouth. Mm-hmm. I'd go all the way out to Commerce Township to go to CJ's. And then I'd go to Copper Canyon Brewery in Southfield.
Oh, like, yeah,
that was a route. Mm-hmm. Like very early on, like probably in 2010, maybe even 2009, now that I think about it. That was one of the first routes I ever did because we've known each other for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And I always – when people ask me that now, they're just like, what did you used to do then to get there? And I'm like, I had to drive a lot. We had to drive a lot farther is what we had to do. And now there's just so much more on that side of the town because it was an underserved side of town. Now you got stuff in Canton and Northville and someone about to open in Livonia.
Today.
And that's today, right? Yeah. That's
first opening.
They're doing the soft opening, aren't they?
They did that last weekend.
Supernatural.
Yep.
Brewery and Spirits. Spirits and Brewery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I look forward to going in there. And
good beer. Good beer.
Yeah.
Chris,
I don't know them. So
I've known Chris for a long time. He's the brewer. And I've been in there already. I had a few of the beers there. Great beer. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I'm happy. I told him too. I said, I'm so happy you make good beer because people are – he's literally across the street, across the parking lot in the street from our production plant. And people are asking me about, what do you think? What do you think? I'm like, hey, he's making good beer, you know. I would hate to have to say something different, you know.
I understand. I get asked these questions a lot. And I always try to give people the benefit of the doubt, or if I go into a place and it's fairly new and maybe everything's not – up to par yet, I just try to say, you know what? They're new. They're getting things dialed in.
Mm-hmm.
You got to give them that kind of space and don't rush to judgment. As a tour operator, I constantly have people in front of me. They want to give me their opinions on everything. And that's
– sure.
You know, I'm lucky that they even want to talk to me about that. But I always try to act like Switzerland in those situations. And, you know, mm-hmm. I didn't get into this business to bash people. I got into this
Absolutely
business to
not.
Support people.
Right.
I want to support people. And that's a good thing. And now you're in a position where – people are asking you those types of questions, and they're interested in your opinion. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you open up the brewery, and give me some reasonings behind why you opened it the way you did, and you kind of what you learned after a couple of years of having it open. So what you guys at the time, it was probably a little different. Not as many breweries weren't going without food. But you said, I'm not going without food. I don't want a kitchen to screw with. So now you're X years in, and you still like that?
Yeah. We intentionally went with the microbrewery license as opposed to the brew pub license. The buildings, I mean, that was our original intent in the first place. We,
yep.
At that time, when we looked at the history of breweries in Michigan, only brew pubs closed. All the microbreweries was literally 100% success rate at the time. So we decided stay away from the food, just, you know, do simple things. I designed everything to be, because the servers are going to be, there's not a kitchen really, it's a closet. So the servers are going to do the food prep too. I wanted everything on the menu to be less than 60 seconds hands on so that they can pay attention to the beer consumers first. And also not trying to wow anybody with the menu either. So it's about the beer. Let's just do the beer and concentrate and, you know. I always felt that when you're not concentrating on the beer solely, then it will fail. It'll suffer. It'll go down. So we went with the no food method. And, I mean, we had some things. I mean, we had pulled pork sandwiches, chili in a bread bowl, but these were all really quick items. They were already hot in a tray and everything. That was part of the problem. I would throw away at the end of the day more than I sold. So,
right.
We cut it all back, and honestly, it's our popcorn machine that makes us the most money, you know. And up until recently, we have some sandwich items now that, you know, again, we're not the food place. You can bring food in. You can order food to be delivered. That's what we recommend, actually, for all the customers, preferably.
What's that awesome pizza place down the road?
I was going to mention that when you were talking about that tour, that was Belly Busters. Yeah, we get the pizza for the beer tours, and I remember it was like, because I've been on some of your tours as a guest, thank you very much, and I remember going to some of the places and they put out the lunch or whatever for the group, and it's like really only enough for like four people, a smaller pizza or something. Yeah, I remember these pizzas from Belly Busters. You guys were taking half of it with you.
Oh, no doubt.
Left over. Big pie.
Yeah, I've really learned from that experience of using places like Belly Busters. And that's what I prefer to do at every place.
Yeah.
Is if I can deliver in pizzas, you can do that in a big mass group. And everyone stays pretty happy. And again, with the same philosophy you have, I really want people to focus on the beer and the brewery and not focus on the cuisine. I'm not a foodie. It's not that I don't like food. But when I think of my favorite breweries, I don't think of the food there. I think of the beer there. So I've always tried to focus on that. Occasionally I'll get customers on and they'll just be like, we're just getting pizza. I'm like, well, 900% of the other tours don't offer any food.
Right.
The fact that I'm even giving you pizza is kind of a bonus.
And this isn't hot and ready. You know,
yeah.
This is really good pizza too.
Yeah, so yeah. I use Jets a lot because they
– Oh, that's really good pizza.
Because that really works well too. And Jets seems to be by a lot of places, like Kunin, for example, or Dragomead, back when Dragomead didn't have barbecue. So, okay. So you didn't do the food route. You did entertainment at times, right?
When we first opened, we started doing – because – and this is one of those when you asked – you led into this whole part about things I'd do different. I'm gonna,
yeah,
I'm gonna,
that's why I ask it that way.
I'm going to – prelude one of them now, the upstairs, the upper hall, having a separate tasting room like that. It's been efficient for us for the live entertainment when we first started, and then also for rentals, hall rentals. But generally, I wish I had just had that seating down on the main floor with the main tasting room and just keep it all in one section. But back to live entertainment, when we first started doing it, there was nobody in Plymouth doing live entertainment anymore. And we started doing it, and we were successful with it for about a year, year and a half, because some of the other bars started picking up on it and doing live entertainment as well. And it seemed that, you know, the same groups were playing at my place and then a couple other places in town. So it took a couple years, two and a half, three years for us to finally realize stop doing the live entertainment. We were totally losing money doing it. And so we ended up stopping that. And like I said, the hall rentals, that was one of the things that it bothered me when I knew we were generally losing money having live entertainment. But meanwhile, I'm telling people over the phone, I'm sorry, you can't pay me to use my space that
weekend. I want to give you money, but
But I have to give it. I have to give my money to somebody else to scare my, to scare my customers away with loud crap. So, yeah. So I, you know, eventually we stopped doing that and started taking the money instead for the events. And I got to say, one of the favorite and most common uses of that upper hall is co-ed baby showers.
Really?
You wouldn't think of it at a brewery.
No, I wouldn't.
But the guys will come down and hang out watching TV, watching football, drinking.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, let the girls play the games upstairs. So, I mean, it's a great space, and it's very inexpensive for, you know, what it is.
I've been to a lot of wedding receptions at breweries now. That's definitely pretty common. Mm-hmm. So I can see where all those parts of it fit in now from a rental perspective.
Oh, yeah.
As a tour operator, I come across it constantly. I do lots of bachelorette parties as private events, and they're always asking those questions to me too, like, where can we rent? Where can we do this? Mm-hmm. I guess it's because we have, you know, generations of people coming out of college that have now been raised on craft beer. They like hanging out in breweries, and why not, right? It all kind of fits in. Plus, you got a pretty space upstairs. I mean, it's a nice space to do that, and it's not too big.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's very cool.
And again, you're not locked into a menu. You can have a caterer, or you can order pizza, or you could bring in potluck, you know.
Right.
So it adds a lot of flexibility.
So, okay. So eventually you guys say, all right, we got the brew pub. Now we want to get some bottle product out in the marketplace.
Wah, wah, wah.
And you did a little work at least, and you have bottle product out there. You open up a production brewery when?
Three and a half years ago or so, we started producing on our own finally.
In Livonia, right?
Yep, yep. Just 3 miles, just 5K from the,
5K.
Yeah. Yeah.
For our international guests.
I wanted to do a bottle to bar run, but the people who I would get involved to help me organize it are saying it's a minimum 350 people running, and I thought, okay, I can't accommodate that.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so we can't really do it.
That's why I don't do running events. Running events get a lot of people. Not that I don't like getting a lot of people, but it's tricky working with places when it's like that. I do understand.
Yeah, yeah. Just would have been a little tight, but yeah, we started our own production plant because we really, 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 really needed to. We originally started bottling and packaging, doing contract brewing out of liquid manufacturing in Brighton.
Okay,
that was the old local color brew house, and in fact, Ken Bailow was the brewer there for me, who is the original brewer on that system at Local Color. The issue there was we had a lot of trouble just getting on the schedule, just get our product produced, just getting our stuff brewed. I mean, I would send ingredients over there and they would sit for weeks and I couldn't get on the brew stand to make the beer. We also had a packaging issue with them, just a yield thing, like the bottle line leaked severely and you'd only get like 60%
out
of the bottle line.
That's not good.
No, it's not good. I mean, it's partially my loss, but it's mostly their loss, which was odd that it was continual and not really, not enough attention paid to it, I believe. So,
so out of necessity, you said, hey, we need to open up a production brewery.
Well, we did go to another brewery, actually right here in Royal Oak. We were at another brewery at,
I forgot about that as I just said that.
Yeah, over at Milking It Productions, and we actually bought our own bottling line and a couple tanks and put them in there so that we wouldn't have to deal with that same issue of not being able to get in to do our work. But that didn't totally take care of that part. There were still access issues there and other issues that we ended up having with the package product in the out in the trade. We had some quality issues out there too. That certainly didn't help our brand whatsoever, but we eventually determined that we have to do this on our own. We have to make our own beer if we want it to be done as efficiently and high quality that we wanted. And that's what we did, and we started a little over 3.5 years ago. And if you're out there and you see our beer in bottles and it doesn't have our logo crown on top of it, I wouldn't buy it. That's not a fresh beer at all. And believe it or not, that's still out there.
That's amazing.
It is amazing how stuff just goes on the shelf and just just stays, just doesn't disappear. So
you thought that was a distributor's job to make sure that didn't happen that way, but
you would think a lot of things are a distributor's job. Apparently, apparently sales aren't really one of them.
Right.
You know, actual promotion of your product or your brand. That's not necessarily.
So that always falls back to you to a certain degree.
Yes.
So you got to be out there doing events. That's probably where we see each other the most is at beer festivals for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So today, do you bring in other clients for the production brewery occasionally?
We have been trying our damnedest to get some contract brewing because, as I had mentioned, maybe I didn't mention earlier, but doing the distribution, production, all the small package distribution, even keg distribution, just to get on tap somewhere, it's horrible anymore. It's so
– it's a very competitive business now.
It is so competitive. And honestly, even these companies that are paying for – like if I were to pay a sales rep $35,000, let's say, which is not a ton of money, and that person is responsible for going out and let's say I need them to hit 20 or 25 accounts a week, the – most valuable thing for me to do is have that person hit only draft accounts that are going to buy half barrel at a time, not sixths, not sixth barrels.
Right.
Because the six barrels, they just, you know, when it's gone, it's not like they get another one of yours. They switch to a different brand of something, you know.
Because we're in a rotation nation right now.
Absolutely.
We're constantly moving through handles. Yeah.
Absolutely. And even like you go into the stores that have, you know, a billion bottles and six packs. I'll walk into somewhere where I know they have my beer. I see it on the sales report. I know they bought it. And I'll walk in and I'm looking up and down. I can't even find my own brand. You know, it's just, it's so washed out, the whole wall of pictures. And, you know, it's not easy anymore getting the consumer out there to, you know, have any kind of loyalty to your brand, for instance. You really have to hit a home run and get some serious social media chatter on one of your brands. That's really the only way to get going, you know, to get something really productive in distribution. So, yeah, we've been trying to, you know, our production has been down to the point that, you know, it's not enough for the production plant that we're in. We've been trying to get other brands, other breweries to come in and do contract brewing. We'll do the brewing for them. We can do a you know, we are proven as a very high quality and highly efficient production and packaging facility. We just need the clients. We just need people to come in and give us money to make their beer for them. And,
well, for everyone who's listening out there,
yeah,
and you need a great place to contract some beer through, reach out to Joe. You can get him through the Liberty Street website and obviously on Facebook. So, okay, interesting. So I think we need to crack up another beer on that note. Because we don't want that sitting anywhere. We want to drink it, right? Thank you doing that. That did go right into the microphone. That's how you know Joe's been on some podcasts before because he knows how to do that correctly.
Oh, yeah. This isn't my first time here. I knew to bring extra beer for the Better on Draft guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yep. Thanks to the Better on Draft guys for setting up the show for me. I do appreciate that, all those boys. Okay. So that's a good segue to what you're doing now, in addition to running the brewery and the production brewery, the brew pub, what also are you doing? And this opportunity came to you, what, a couple years ago?
Yeah, the Schoolcraft Brewing and Distillation Program. I'm one of the instructors there. I helped set up the program a few years back. I was very, very, very happy when the vice president of the college came and presented to me that he had an interest for initiating a brewing distillation program at the college. You know, they're right up the street from where we are. So
how handy is that?
Extremely handy. That's one of the best parts about it. Another great part about it is that it's tied in with the culinary arts department and program there. So, you know, food production, it's still food production when you're making beer as well. So definitely.
So it was in their wheelhouse at Schoolcraft to say we should get into this brewing and distilling programs. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. One of the another great thing they had going for them, they've already got a successful restaurant in the school. So they are just about to, I think very soon, are going to be opening it as a pub. And
I just shared that on Facebook.
Yeah. I think it's just Tuesday and Wednesday, I think. But fine. That's great. It's you know,
you
got
to start somewhere.
And yeah, and they're good creative beers that are that, you know, well-made, very creative beers that are going to be on tap there. They're going to do a whole different bar type menu, completely different from what they normally do in the kitchen.
So they're going to have a food menu tied into the beer is what you're saying.
Yeah.
In this pub right on
burgers
campus.
And fries kind of nachos kind of menu is what I'm saying. It's not going to be the normal American Harvest restaurant.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I gotcha.
Yeah. But the program itself though, I think we're in the third year now of it and, we've got, I don't even know how many graduates now because we've got several people. They'll finish it in two semesters. It's 24 credits.
Okay.
So not terribly much. And
Are most classes a three-credit kind of class?
Three or four.
Three or four? Okay.
Mine's 4-credit.
Well, of course. You're a big shooter.
it's a long class. It's a 15-week, 4-hour
Oh, class. That is a long class. Yeah.
Yeah, we do some labs. I'll actually have the class come to my production plant, and we'll do CIP procedures and work on the packaging line. And
CIP.
Other things. Oh, I'm sorry. Clean in place.
Thank you. Okay.
Wow, I forgot. it's just basically the cleaning and sanitizing of the tank. Clean in place just means you're cleaning it because it's a giant tank, and you can't just bring it over to a tub and scrub it.
So that's pretty hands on. So describe your exact class then. So like what's the title of your class?
Mine is cellaring, packaging and quality assurance. That's kind of,
wow. That's a lot to say. Okay.
Yeah. So it's basically, Tom Block has the, brewing and ingredients half of the same kind of a class. So he's basically doing hot side with the wort production. And then I do cold side from the brew house. Once the brew session is done, it's the next couple weeks that you're fermenting the beer and conditioning the beer and packaging the beer, all the transfers and, you know, the things that can happen with oxidation or infection, you know, things that can happen in between it. And so mine's like the cold side. My class is like the cold side of the brewing process.
So you're a couple years into this, I guess. What have you learned now as an instructor, as a professor here? Has it helped you in your craft as a brewer?
I'd say the most obvious help is a couple of employees that I've pulled from the program. You know,
okay.
A little, taking the best.
Right. I see. What it's helped is that you as a professor gets to pick maybe the people you thought were the best from it.
First round draft pick every time.
That actually does sound pretty obvious. Yeah. Okay. How about you as a brewer? Have you been able – has that helped you, I guess, the act of you having to teach people at this level kind of from nuts to bolts, from A to Z, has that helped you personally?
I would definitely say there's absolutely some things just in the research on putting my program together. There's been, you know, a few nuggets of things that, you know, I knew about, but I didn't have to. I never felt like I had to really research and delve into the details behind it. I would just do my own experimentation and not really look at the full on, here's the math, you know, kind of part of it. So.
But as a teacher, you need to explain it that way
to a
student. Yep.
Yeah.
You do, because they're going to ask you that.
These are not stupid people taking this class. And,
yeah.
And I'll go ahead and say there's three people in my class right now that are already in the industry, working. So, you know, they kind of know what I'm talking about, which is good. I rarely am telling my students something and I rarely get that deer in the headlight gaze. They usually, nods of affirmation, or, you know, you see like the light bulb, oh yeah, kind of a thing. So, it definitely, I'm picking up on some new things too, as well. And again, some of these people, I got a lot of ladies there too. And the age range is all over from under 21 to over 60, actually.
So you don't have to be 21.
No, actually, Michigan state law allows alcohol consumption for purpose of education and training and sampling.
So is that from 18?
On the school premise.
18?
18, yep.
Interesting. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, it was weird because doing some sampling for training in the classroom, I've had some students under 18. They were allowed to sample. But when we go to my brewery for the lab, when we're doing – you know, physical training on the bottling line or the cleaning and everything, I'm usually pulling a couple beers out of the cold room.
Oh, yeah. They couldn't drink that.
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah, that totally makes sense.
Yep.
Wow. Well, I learned something today. Okay. Mm-hmm. I had to learn something here, right?
May as well.
Reminding myself how much I like this beer. That's for sure.
Me too.
So what's next, you think, for the school craft program? Besides the fact that you said the brew pub's going to be opening to the public, that's pretty exciting. For the program itself, is it – how many students typically a semester?
There's six classes total or seven? Six or seven classes total.
Yeah, I thought it was six or seven classes. Yeah.
And though there's 24 seats in any of them, we're usually about half capacity. I know I've already got 12 registered for the winter semester that starts at the end of the year. I think it might wait till the beginning of next year this time finally, thank goodness.
Yeah, I don't know the timing for school craft. So yeah. As someone who's taught at Macomb Community College, we wouldn't start till we got into January. So okay. So there's room to grow though, for sure, in the program.
Oh, sure. Sure. They're and you know, we're learning things and even how to even run the brewery itself that's at the school. Though I do take my students off site to go to my brewery for hands-on training. The reason I'm doing it there is they seem to like the going there and having a couple of beers. But from my point of view is these people, as they're going to go out and try to get jobs, if they're going to go into a brewery and say, oh, I know how to do that, but it's on a, you know, it's a very small system or whatever. This takes, you know.
This brings them to a larger system for sure. How big's your brew system at the production brewery?
It's a 15-barrel brew house, and then the tanks are 30 barrels.
And 30s.
Yeah, and if the students can get their hands on those, it takes a little bit of intimidation out of when they go to apply or try to get a job at a bigger brewery. If they're only used to using the 3-barrel or 7-barrel tanks at school, you know, it might seem daunting because it's bigger. It's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing. You just scale up the amount of solution, the pump horsepower. You know, whatever you're doing, you just, you know, there's equipment to do it, and you just, it's the process is what you've got to learn. But it's a good experience to see the bigger equipment.
Okay. So let's change gears a little bit now. Thanks for sharing all that about the school craft program. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting to hear it. It just shows the growth in our industry and how there's multiple programs like this in Michigan and now across the country that are all really thriving and doing really interesting stuff and giving new opportunities to people in the beer industry here. So what's next for the brew pub? What are you excited about? What beers do you have coming out in December, January, February that you're all excited about? Let's talk about beer styles here a little bit.
Can we talk about winter beers, holiday beers, Christmas beers?
Yeah.
Everybody keeps asking me, hey, what's your Christmas beer? What's your holiday beer? I'm like, we don't like make a Christmas beer kind of a thing.
You don't, do you? I didn't think
no,
you did.
No, but we do have a winter beer. I mean, usually every year this time we have our Pooh Beer, Honey Porter. That's coming out actually might be on tap later this evening at the pub. That's a very popular 10.5% honey porter.
Just 10.5%. I love honey porters though. It's a subset of the porter style that I really enjoy. Obviously you do.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of honey are you putting in there?
Well, it's just a wildflower honey.
It's a wildflower honey.
We're basically just using the honey for alcohol production.
Yep.
I mean, you're not really going to taste the honey, you know, unless you're doing 100% honey mead, then you kind of get the honey character from
sure.
it. But when you're making a beer, Even our summer version of the honey, the Pooh beer is our Swarm Outside, which is a honey lager at 8%.
Yeah, I've had that. Jeez, did I have that? Did you have that up in the UP? Or maybe I said it this summer. The UP?
Probably both.
Okay.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah, because it's like the it's a semi-seasonal. The Pooh beer is for the fall, winter, and then the,
right.
the Swarm Outside for spring, summer kind of a thing.
I remember drinking that up in Marquette with you because I wanted to see the German girls you had sitting there at your booth.
Oh, yeah.
It's yeah. my UP I mean, crew, I did want to say hi. I don't want to make it sound like I didn't want to say hi, but
yeah.
you did have some great people back there pouring, and they did I think you said they kind of decorated your whole booth up there for you.
They're awesome. The very first time I was up there – years ago, I'm standing there by myself, and it was very lightly attended. I think it was the first one, and they came over and started talking to me, and next thing you know, when people were coming up for beer, they jumped behind and started pouring the beer, and I'm like, this is awesome. They said, this is fun. Next year, we'll bring blah, blah, blah. Here's my number. Well, and that's my UP crew, Teresa.
That's so cool.
Lana and Carl. Yeah, they're awesome. They were.
Yeah, they all seem real friendly. I think I have a picture with them somewhere, I'm sure. On my Instagram feed. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. Great photo op.
That was pretty early on.
Yeah.
So I was laughing because you're just like, try this, try that, try this. And everything's like, especially the beer you just referred to, that 8 point, what'd you say? 8.5?
Swarm Outside.
Yeah, yeah. It was super easy to drink.
Oh, yeah. It's a lager. It's a lager drinker, but it's a high ABV with a slight honey character.
I really enjoyed that. Okay.
Yeah.
So you got Pooh Bear coming out maybe tonight at the brew pub.
Our Emperor Norton, our Imperial Stout, another. I think it's like a 9.5%er, but it's a really good one. Where I'm currently trying to come across some relatively inexpensive fresh bourbon barrels if I can, because usually every year I put some down Emperor Norton in the Buffalo Trace barrels, and we'll release it on Easter as Majesty, and that is quite popular as well. So it's just bourbon barrels from when I started; they were like $90 delivered. And now they're well over $200
yeah,
for
wow.
a barrel. So.
Yeah, when people want to maybe bitch a little bit about buying a bourbon barrel-aged beer at a bar or a bomber of it somewhere, they need to like take a step back and look at from the brewer's side or the owner's side.
Yeah,
and
blame
say,
the broker for the barrel because
yeah,
the
whole
same,
barrel
same
industry.
Broker that had the barrels, the same barrel for under $100 is now over $200. And
yeah.
there's no real increase on their cost.
So you it's tricky for
travel.
You then, because now you're just like, all right, well, I was selling it for blank for a pour, and now I got to sell it way up here.
Right,
and
right.
I didn't necessarily change the product. Mm-hmm. It was just for me to get those raw materials again. Yeah, that's challenging.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things like, you know, even certain hops like our Soul Geometry, our New England IPA. Those hops are more expensive than the rest of the beer ingredients kind of a thing. So you've got to, like what you said, you've got to price it accordingly or keep it at the same price, but just do a smaller pour. We do like a 14 ounce snifter for that.
Okay. Yeah. I think the more experienced beer drinkers now have really figured that out. They really get why they're getting the pours differently.
Sure.
To try to keep the pricing not so scary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I have to say, like, the price creep is a big concern of mine in the whole beer industry now. And a lot of these newer places open up, and then out of the gate, they don't really have any beers at a lower price point. Like, everything's really high. And I was just researching breweries in Chicago because I'm going there with my wife in December. And I was looking at beer lists, and not a lot of places put their beer prices online anymore. That's
right.
not very common. But a couple of them did. And I was looking at this new place somewhere on the west side of Chicago, and it was like they didn't have a beer, all of which they produced on site, that wasn't cheaper than $7. Didn't even say the ounce size, right? So I don't know if that was a pint. Let's just assume it was.
Mm-hmm.
But still, so everything that your entry price point when you go on there is $7.
That's
harsh.
That's
right?
harsh.
Yeah,
that's
I mean, there's no way around that.
But now if you're looking at Chicago, you're looking at seriously high rent district
aren't
too.
You?
So, I mean, they've got to cover their costs as well. I mean, not to take their side, but that is – I mean, again, that's where you have to look at
– I'm a business person. I understand
what is
right?
their expense? Yeah.
So that's a struggle.
I mean, we have the cheapest beer in Plymouth. We literally have the cheapest, freshest beer in Plymouth, and hardly anybody pays full price there, you know, with our mug club and our happy hour, and we stack our discounts. So, and the Homebrewer Association, just say you're AHA, you get $1 off first pint, you know. Yeah.
And those are things I think people remember. And a lot of these new places open up, they're maybe they don't have the clientele set up at that standpoint. Maybe they spent all their money to open that place up. I get it. I give them all the benefit of the doubt. But I'm a business person too, and I've been a small business operator for a long time now. And I look at it from my customer's standpoint, and I want to give my customer a good value.
Exactly.
And I still want to give them a quality product. So I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not selling $10 beer tours, right? I get it. I'm selling more of a mid-market kind of tour, but I constantly look at pricing now, and I get concerned, I guess, about the craft beer world and this price creep. And eventually, somewhere, it hasn't totally happened yet, eventually the consumer is going to be like, wow, I'm totally done with doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to see a lot of changes. We'll probably see some places that can't stay open because they probably didn't have enough money to make adjustments. And I think we'll see places maybe change their variety. I don't want to say dump down their beers, but I think some of the more expensive beers, maybe you won't have 20 of those options when you go in a place. Maybe you'll just have a couple and you'll have more tiered beers, like more sessionable beers, like what we've been drinking here, that you can sell at a price that I can wrap my hands around a little better. Because when I go out, I'm not drinking 10 beers anymore when I go out, per se, but I also don't want to feel like every beer I drank, I just totally got an extra $2-3 thrown on it and kind of got ripped off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but sorry for the consumer if you feel like you're not getting your dollars worth and if you get sick of paying that kind of thing. But honestly, it's the retailer that's the problem. I'll include the wholesaler there as well.
Okay.
You know, the wholesaler wants to talk about 30 points. It's 50% is what they're doing. If I sell them a half barrel keg for $100, they sell it to the retailer for $150. Now that retailer is going to get, basically it costs them $1 a pint. So it's that retailer, that bar or restaurant that now what they're going to do it. Their cost was $1, a little over $1 a pint for that price beer, which is a normal price for an average, you know, craft beer.
Yeah, say like a 6%-ish range, maybe 4 to 6 in that range.
So now it's the consumer that needs to fight the retailer that's going to do the $7 pint like you just talked about. Now, okay, if it's the poo beer, first of all, don't serve it in a pint.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, maybe charge a little more because of a higher ABV or a higher rarity or something like that. But it's the retailer that has to be reasonable with the consumer and kind of gauge where they're pushing them to the edge to the point of that, okay, we went too far and lost them because we're too much. And if they lose them, I'd like to hope that the consumer is going to go back and revert back to the place of production, the pub, the brewery that has a tasting room. They're probably going to charge the least amount of that same exact product, and it's going to be a higher quality and fresher, you know, and better taken care of. So, you know, maybe that eventually you're going to have that burst. It's not going to be the brewery. It's going to be the craft beer places that are overcharging for the hot product.
Sure. Because I've definitely gone into places, I've gone into beer bars where they'll have all day IPA on draft. We know that'd be a lower price keg for sure. And I'll see them parity price that with some higher alcohol beers, and I'll be like, whoa.
With a regular IPA.
Yeah, I'll be like, or I'll see that with New Belgium Fat Tire. I'll see places ratchet up the price on that, and I know that that's a lower keg price. Like, I sure know all this stuff, and it just irritates me when I'm in there. It turns me off to the place, makes me want to drink less in there. It definitely wouldn't make me loyal if I felt like that was the case all the time.
Right.
So it's an interesting conversation that I'm sure we could go on and on about.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how it's my fault. I guess I inserted that into the conversation there. But let's talk about some events coming up. I'm going to talk about a couple of my events coming up because it just so ties into you and I talking today. What do I have coming up on November 30th, Joe?
Well, at Liberty Street Brewing Company in the upper hall that I the rarely used upper hall seating area that I mentioned earlier. Steven's going to be up there talking live about his book, The Detroit Beer History, and he's going to be co-hosting with David Bardalis, who did the Ann Arbor beer book. So
very true.
I'm really excited. I can't believe it was, I think we were at one of the events somewhere, maybe summer, and I was talking to you and Dave walked up and it took me about a half a minute to realize, oh my God, these are the two. Yeah. I mean, you're dear friends and have been for a long time. So it's not a big deal that I'm talking to you. That's normal. But it was the two of you at the same time. I'm like, oh my God, yeah, you guys both wrote the book. Hey, you guys should talk about it together. So
boom, done.
Yeah.
I'm excited. So 7 p.m. November 30th, if you visit MotorCityBrewTours.com or check us out on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, you can get more information about that event. That's a free event. Just come out. You could drink a bunch of great Liberty Street beer, hopefully including Pooh Bear. We'll definitely be on at that point.
Yep.
And I'm looking forward to it. David and I are doing a couple of those. I'm also going to be out in Chelsea Ale House the next week after that, speaking of Chelsea from your earlier story.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be doing the same exact thing out there, although we won't have quite as private of a space there, but that's all right. I'll have a microphone at least there.
Tell everybody.
That's right. Tell everyone. Yeah. Pass it around. So some other events I got with Motor City Brew Tours coming up on November 24th. I am doing a Black Friday brewery walk-a tour here in Royal Oak. I'm almost sold out, so I'm pretty excited to do that. And then on December 2nd, I'll be doing the same thing, but I'll be doing that in Midtown for a walk-a tour. And then December 9th, I got a really fun tour. I made mention of Fenton Winery and Brewery before. So on December 9th, I'm doing a brewery bus tour out to Fenton Winery and Brewery. I'm going to Northern Oak Brewery in Holly and Parker's Hilltop Brewery in like kind of the edge of Clarkston Township. I always forget if it's considered that there.
Yeah, Waterford, Clarkston.
Sure.
I think they're listed as Waterford, but they're on the edge next to
But they're
to
like
Clarkston.
On the edge, aren't they? Yeah, it's like a huge place. Have you been in there before?
I have not been there, nope.
It's pretty big. Yeah.
It's on my radar. I don't get out much at all, actually, especially to other breweries. So
I find that out with a lot of brewers that I know that they don't always get that chance. So obviously you're always welcome on one of my tours though. I want to thank you for coming out today, Joe. We had a lot of fun talking here for the last hour, drinking some of your beer, hearing about your background and the production brewery and the brew pub. And I hope you guys can go check out Liberty Street Brewing Company. You can visit them. You check out the website. Visit them in person in Plymouth. And learn more about this podcast at MotorCityBrewTours.com or BetterOnDraft.com. Any last remarks before we sign off?
Oh, I was just going to thank you. Thank you for having me. And, yes, our website is LibertyStreetBeer.com. We're also Liberty Street Beer on Instagram and Twitter. And I guess that's about it.
You guess that's about it? Yeah, all right. Yeah. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to the Beer Tour Guys show. And keep on listening. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with Paul Starr from Alma Beer Hound. Thanks.